Great to have your company, and it's great to have the company of Terry Henderson from OTI, who could have a very big weekend. Runners in Group 1s, horses everywhere. The OTI colours have been flying very high in recent weeks. How are you, Terry?
Very well, thanks, Michael.
Is this the strongest group of horses you think you've ever had?
Yes, no doubt. Obviously, COVID was good for people like us because people wanted to buy them. And fortunately, we acquired a few good ones during that period.
Yeah. How many would you have under the banner now?
There's about 130 racehorses and about 40 breeding stock. And obviously, there's about 30 of the racehorses in Europe and about four or five of our breeding stock in Europe.
How long has the breeding been up and running?
It's always been there, right back to early days with Simon, and so we've maintained that, but I've probably made it a bit more commercial. We've gone a little bit into a better class of mare, and obviously some of the horses were bred to trade for our owners, and some of them were bred to race.
So it's a big operation now.
Well, it is, and it, you know, the guys do a remarkable job. Gus Boyd's up in Sydney these days, and Shane in Melbourne has been with us for about 18 years, and they do a terrific job just keeping everything on the rails.
Yeah, and the overseas horses, we get to see a lot of them come out here, but you race a lot, as you mentioned, over in Europe as well. So is that a focus that you want to keep growing, or is it difficult to try and find horses at that price point these days?
Well, it's difficult to try and find the horses at the price point, but last year we launched Eurolink, where we have these horses with the European trainers until the end of their three-year-old, and they're already predestined to which trainers they're going to in Australia. So someone like Harry Eustace has already teamed up with Annabelle Neesham, and that horse is coming out here. So that part of it is certainly going to continue to grow. But having said that, the horses that we'll have out on the track this year are a combination of ones we've bred and ones we've bought, some as going horses and a few as yearlings. And in fact, that all starts on Thursday night at Wolverhampton and then starts to build momentum as the Derby horses get ready and the Guineas horses get ready for the May and June races.
Have you got a couple that you think are likely types over there?
Yes. In France, we've got two Guineas horses, one for the male division and one for the female. Both very good horses. One's already won a Group 3 as a two-year-old. And in England, we've got a couple of lovely colts who are both nommed for the English and Irish derbies, one with Michael Bell and the other one with Joseph O'Brien. And
one so what of are their names?
A Deacon is with Joseph and Banderas with Bell.
So we'll be looking forward to watching them. And the horse in France, what's its name?
Everything counts as the three-year-old colt that's going to I forget the name that they call them in France, the male guineas, and a horse called Tigress for the female guineas.
You would know better than anyone the calibre of those horses compared to what we have here in Australia. How much of a chasm is there between the two of them when you're getting to middle-distance staying stocks?
At the basic end, if you've got a horse that's rated 85 in England, for example, I think you can pretty much say he should be just about Saturday class here.
Right.
And if you've got a good Group 2 horse, a good Group 3 horse in England, he's likely to become a Group 1 horse. You know, he's got the Group 1 potential to race here. And, of course, when you bring these horses over here, if you get a good rating early days, we've got the benefit of these, you know, group handicaps, which they don't have over there. Because once you win a group race in Europe, it's all set weights. So you don't get the advantages that we might be able to get here by getting a Group 3 horse over here, getting it a rating of 103 and putting it into a Doncaster with a reasonable show, which is pretty much what we've got this weekend.
And the prize money, I'll talk about Cepheus in a moment. The prize money is phenomenal in Australia compared to the UK. But what's a general price point over there for those, say, what you say is a group, to give us the rating horses and then the group horse that you'll be looking to try and buy at here, what kind of ballpark are you talking?
You'd be very lucky to buy a Group 3 horse over there for under 500,000 euros.
So that's what, 800,000 Australian?
Yeah. And obviously, if you go to the higher end, it's not unusual. You know, Gold Trip, it's well known that he cost, I think, 2.3 million Australian dollars. So, you know, you can go up from there. So you've really, we rely heavily on having, you know, the guys on the ground over there that can spot a late two-year-old or an early three-year-old, and hopefully we can do a deal and maybe buy half and keep it in Europe for the rest of its three-year-old year and then bring it out, which we've done with quite a number of horses. The most notable, obviously, was Gallo Shop.
Yeah. I'm going to get into your horses in a moment, but I want to ask you, as one of the Leviathan owners and syndicators who have horses with a number of trainers, how many trainers do you have in Australia that you use?
Probably upwards of 20, yeah. 30, yeah.
The debate about work-life balance, training hours, which has been flowing since we've had the shocking falls in recent weeks. What's your viewpoint? What are you hearing from trainers?
Most of them want to get on the bandwagon. You know, we've got the specific example at the moment with Ballarat, and I was up there yesterday and talking to a couple of trainers about it because it's a hot topic over there, up there, and I'm sure they will continue on with the later working hours. You know, I heard Matty Stewart yesterday, and I thought it was a lot of rubbish, to be honest, what he was saying about this is a generational thing. This isn't a generation thing. This is something that's got to happen because it flows not only through this health and safety issues, and as one trainer pointed out to me yesterday, can you imagine putting an 18-year-old girl on a horse travelling at 60 kilometres an hour in the dark with no headlights?
Yeah.
And that's what we're required to do. So that's just not acceptable in this day and age, health and safety-wise. So there's that issue. There's the issue of attracting young people to our industry, you know, and I think we've got a far, far better chance of doing that if we've got later starting hours, particularly for those people that might want, you know, as many of our people are young, under 18, they need some help to get to work in the morning. So for that reason as well. But the sheer logic of it all, we're racing later in the day, so we should be starting earlier in the day. We've got much better training facilities. Cranbourne is a fantastic facility. Pakenham's good. Both of these facilities can start later. And if we get the facility built out at Micklem, wherever it is, you know, we can design that as they do in Europe. You know, we are one out when it comes to internationally, this is, starting at such ridiculously early hours. So, you know, it won't take long for people to change their habits once there's a process in place for them to do it.
Neil Bainbridge, who we speak to today, says a survey of their trainers, 80% say, no, we want to keep it the early mornings. Why?
Well, I have trouble, but I wouldn't dare argue with Neil because he's done such a great job at Cranbourne. It doesn't make much sense if you're looking at the longer term and the broader issues that are going to be involved in racing being successful into the future.
Mm. You happy with the footprint, the blueprint moving forward for Victorian racing, which emphasises the night racing, twilight racing as the premium times?
Well, we know, you know, we rely on the punt for the lifeblood of the game, and we know that's when people want to punt. It's not about whether people want to be on the track, it's when they want to punt. So if we want to maintain the sort of stake level that we currently enjoy, we've got to go with the trends that the market dictates. They drive what we should be doing. And then we've got to adjust the rest of our processes around that.
Mm. You race horses all around Australia. How difficult is it when we've not got a cohesive pattern for horses around Australia at the moment? And I know, you know, you speak to a lot of influential people. Do you see the situation at the moment with Racing Australia, Victoria, New South Wales getting better anytime soon, or is it just going to be something we all need to live with?
No, I don't see, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel at the moment. History tells us when we've got a situation that we've got, say, in New South Wales, that the only people that are going to change how New South Wales currently does their thing, which is totally in isolation to everybody else, is if there's a move internally, you know, where you've got a very powerful a group of people running an organisation. It needs to be someone within their own environment that actually changes it. We know we're not going to change it. We know Racing Australia in the broader sense is not going to change it. So until that happens, I don't think we're going to get any real change there. I think what we can do in Victoria is get our own house in order. And I think we've got a lot to do here in terms of the amalgamation of the city clubs. I think that's a no-brainer.
So you want to see the city clubs become one?
Yes, most certainly. It's an antiquated system. The old days where they could argue that the competition between the clubs was going to be what kept them alive is gone. Our competition's now with other racing jurisdictions, but it's with other entertainment where we can bet on you know, doesn't matter what it is. I think it's antiquated. Our clubs have done a remarkably good job over the years, and they still are in their isolated activities, but they're very desperate in the way that they control their businesses. The VRC's shown 2 years of massive losses. We've got property developments at the MRC and at Moonee Valley, which are very, very good. But, you know, when we come to try to organise the way we put in our races, you know, you've got to have some feeling for Racing Victoria, because they've got to go through all these hoops to try and do something that's quite simple, which should be simple, and that is simply to change a racing program for the betterment of the industry as a whole. So when you've got that situation, you know, I think we're dealing with an antiquated structure in Victoria that needs to be attended to.
Do you think that would ever occur? Because there's going to be a lot of fighting to get that to occur.
Well, there's got to be one or two things. It's going to have to happen because people have to see it happen, and we saw that in the AFL 20-odd years ago when a few clubs were in a bit of strife. You know, if the VRC's bottom line doesn't improve in this next 2 years, they're going to have some significant strife on their hands. So they might not have much choice but to start and talk to Moonee Valley and the MRC about, you know, combining. Because, you know, you look at the net asset value of Moonee Valley and the VRC, and nine out of 10 people will probably tell you that the VRC is a much stronger club. Well, it's not on the bottom of the balance sheet.
Mm.
So when you've got that situation, you might have the VRC in the same situation as, you know, Fitzroy was 20, 30 years ago.
It's an interesting discussion point, isn't it? As well as that, you've got some clubs who are extremely rich because of what they own, like the MRC.
Exactly.
Sell or keep Sandown?
Modify the development. I think we're all very comfortable as racing participants in Sandown being maximised as an asset for the MRC and for racing generally. But I don't think you've got to throw the baby out with the bathwater to do that. I think there's plenty of, there's certainly a huge groundswell of industry interest to make sure that we keep the track there. Certainly we can change the facilities that we provide, because we don't fill those stands ever and probably won't. But there's so much land there that can be developed. So I think the MRC is on the right track personally in going through the process, getting the development plans approved, because there's a lot of implications there from a financial point of view for that to happen, and then perhaps modifying those plans to blend the development in with the continuation of racing.
Yeah, keep the course, but develop around it.
Exactly. And we see that around the world in many places, and it works extremely well.
Just on New South Wales, I forgot to ask you before, the 2% that comes out of the owners' pockets for the strappers, which is only paid to New South Wales-based strappers. Did you guys have to pay the... Did you get the 2% when you won the Golden Eagle?
No.
Are you chasing that after hearing that the 2% was given to the GigaKick connections?
Yes.
What's the latest?
Nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't expect any answer soon until we push comes to shove.
Would you pursue that legally?
No.
Okay. What's your viewpoint on that whole rule?
Oh, it's silly. It's just silly. How can you... I think it possibly is unconstitutional, because in Australia we're not supposed to have this difference between states when it comes to these sorts of things. There's a section in the Constitution, I think it's section 96, that says that one state can't do something at the detriment of another state.
Mm.
And I've raised this previously with the people at New South Wales and some of the other things they've done, but this is a blatant discrimination against people from outside the state.
And it's a lot of money at stake.
Well, and it's a lot of money for... very, very important people.
Correct.
Who could change their lives. A 2% of a $10 million or a $7 million winning stake out of the Golden Eagles is a hell of a lot of money.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk about the more money that you might win this weekend in the Group 1s, especially in Sydney. Terry Henderson from OTI in studio. We have live in the studio Terry Henderson from OTI. And Terry, gee, it's a big day for you and your owners, day one of the championships. Having two runners in the Derby, let's start there, because they're both intriguing horses, and the resurgence of New Zealand horses, not just stayers, has been quite remarkable. And you've got two of them which have been very well supported coming through the New Zealand Derby, which looks the right form line, doesn't it? The Sharp and Smart form line. Mark Twain, who was a Herculean run and also full of sincerity.
Yes, they're both really progressive horses, and Really looking forward to them on Saturday.
Mark Twain's only very lightly raced. Mm. Is he the horse that you think out of the two's probably got more upside potential?
Yeah, he's got the X factor. He doesn't commence well in his races, so, you know, from barrier five, we'd probably prefer to reverse the order with Full of Sincerity. But he's got an enormous turn of foot, and I know Roger James is very, very happy with him.
Can he turn the tables on Sharp and Smart from the New Zealand Derby?
Well, I think so. He probably got four lengths off Sharp and Smart, I'm sorry, over the last 300 metres of that race. But, you know, he'll need a good clear run from the crest at Randwick, and if he gets that, I think he'll be very hard to beat.
You get a lot of horses out of New Zealand. Have you noticed over the last couple of seasons that the stock that we are seeing here is back to what it used to be in the old Halcyon days?
Yes, although if you analyse it and you look at the mares that some of these horses come out of, and indeed the stallions that they're bred by, there's nothing extra special about them. You know, they couldn't get horses to go to Shocking a few years ago, and all of a sudden he's producing these Group 1. Poissier, you know, came out of the blue and looks an incredibly exciting stallion, and that's on the back of the likes of the Purring Cantos and so on. So, I think New Zealand trainers are very good. I think, you know, they've certainly got trainers in New Zealand that would hold their head very high in Australia. And so they're, with the better horses coming through, they're more inclined now to come across to Australia and campaign. And they're able to do it, and owners like us are more encouraged to keep the horses in New Zealand because the cost structure is so much lower, even though we've got to pay for them to come to Australia. So, look, there's a number of factors that I think they're encouraging the New Zealanders to do so well, but they certainly excel at the moment.
Actually, just on that, you race a lot of horses in New Zealand. You source a lot of horses from New Zealand. Announcement during the week, huge, with Entain buying the New Zealand tab.
Yes,
and what looks like a big injection of over $10 million initially into racing over there. How much of an effect will that have?
I think it'll be terrific because they'll get greater pools over there. I think the New Zealanders generally aren't as tuned into the punt as we are.
Yep.
We all know those South Islanders. They make Scottish guys look like generous guys. But, so they're not natural punters in the way Australians are. But it'll help a lot, as will the redevelopment of Ellerslie. Again, that's been a very good development, with a lot of development around the track, and that's going to enable them to be running for $80,000 and $100,000 on a Saturday over there.
Full of Serenity. We spoke to Andrew Forsman before. He said, I've got to have a chat to Terry about what we do from that barrier. How do you want to see him ridden in the Derby?
He's got his tongue in his cheek when he said that, because the last thing we do is give jockeys instructions, let alone trainers. Look, I think he'll have to be a little aggressive early and try and get across and get a place. If he can be within the first half of the field, I think he's then got a good chance of finishing off strongly.
He ran well in the Tullock, didn't he?
Really well. It was a prep race for him. I think he needed the run. He was very full of himself before the race, and hopefully he settled down a little bit from that. But I think if he can jump well and we can settle midfield, he'll have his chance.
You haven't had much luck with the barriers on Saturday. Cepheus drawing 16 in the Doncaster as well.
Yes, that was disappointing because he ran so well in the Ajax and led and then kicked. So he's going to need a bit of luck, or he's going to have to use some fuel early. The benefit, of course, is that he's down on 50 kilos. So it'll be an interesting discussion on how he gets ridden.
Is he a better chance than 50-1?
Yes, far better. Mm. Far better.
What's his future, do you think? Because he's performed over 2,000 metres and further, yet he's got the speed now to be in a Doncaster.
Yes, well, all his form was 2,000 metres plus, and if he actually runs the Doncaster well and comes out of it well, we'll back up in the Queen Elizabeth.
Okay, that's big news there. Locally, how many runners at Bendigo on Saturday?
Only the one at this stage, Sous le Nuage for Matty Kamani.
How's it going?
It's going well, but this rain's not going to help it. We scratched today because of the rain, and, you know, if Bendigo's a five or a six, we might even reconsider whether we run there.
A good run on the weekend, SMS. Does Terry expect Timor to get into the Sydney Cup?
Yeah, we're not starting him in the chairman's for that reason. Obviously, it's always difficult, and Sydney aren't all that forthcoming when they're doing, you know, updated lists on where these horses sit. So that being the case, on the work that we can do, we think he's already in the race.
Oh, well, that is good news. And you got an interesting runner today, Cadarzio, who, speaking in the early part of the spring carnival, I know Mick Price had a pretty big opinion of. And how do you think he'll go today?
The rain will help him. First up, it was initially seen as a race to get him started, but I think with this rain, it certainly will help him, and he'd be a strong place chance today. He's a very good horse.
Yeah.
Aimed at the Adelaide Derby.
Adelaide Cup, okay. The South Australian Derby. There was one other, of course, on Thunderstruck. Disappointment yesterday with the news that he's got to go out and have a spell. Was it? Did he come up at all this spring to the expectations?
No, not really. Yeah. No, not really. And you know, Mick's very harsh on himself in the way he brings the horses up, and probably we only needed that one run at the 1400, then go straight to the mile. And I think we came out of spring thinking he was more a 2000 metre horse anyway after the run in the Cox Plate. So I think the spring campaign will be certainly a little different from what it's been, but certainly he didn't do anything in the autumn that gave us a lot of excitement. And obviously we're hanging our hat on him being ready for the All-Stars, and it was just a shocking experience for the horse. And rarely, as we know, do they come out of those sorts of experiences and turn the form around quickly. So I think we were all very happy that he went to the paddock.
Aim in the spring?
Five runs, ending in the Cox Plate and the McKinnon.
So you think he's a genuine 2,000 metre horse still?
Yeah.
Have you got an exciting horse that we haven't seen reach the heights that you're thinking could be one of the spring contenders?
I think if you said it on the level of excitement, certainly it'd be interesting to watch Mark Twain on Saturday because he does look quite exciting. Still a huge fan of Cadarzio. In Australia, in England, the two horses that are nom for both the derbies over there are both very, very talented horses. One's by Australia, and the other one's by Luptvaga. And the trainers, you know, you get a bit of a feel, particularly from these older trainers, as how they are, and both of them rate their horses as the best staying 3-year-olds.
Is it too early to get them out in spring? Would it be the season later? Or?
Yeah, for us, I'm not a big fan of bringing 3-year-olds to Australia in the spring.
Have you got any that will be coming for this spring at this stage?
Too early to tell. Nothing that's really got said, you know, I'm ready to have a Melbourne spring. I think most of them are here. We look like having three in the Sydney Cup. And we've got a couple of up-and-comers that could be there as well by the time we get to spring.
Just remind me, who are the three in the Sydney Cup?
Celino, who won it a couple of years ago, is not racing all that well, but he'll be there. And Ahmad, who ran third in the Adelaide Cup.
Yep. Gee, you got horses. You must not get much sleep yourself watching these horses in all corners of the globe.
It's really, you wake up in the morning with it. First looking at your phone to make sure nothing's gone wrong, and then wondering what's happening today with them.
Speaking of that, we'll take a winner anywhere. Have you got one for us?
There's a nice horse, Wolverhampton.
Wolverhampton!
In England, called Docklands, and he's a relation to Harbour Views that Matty Williams had.
Really?
And he's a very nice horse. He's in a race on Thursday night there, and he's an interesting, probably our most interesting runner in the next few days will be at Dundalk in Ireland, where a horse called Tom the Second.
Oh, no.
is having his first race start.
Name a horse that?
Well, you can imagine who he's a half-brother to.
I love it. That's brilliant. Tom the Second at Dundalk, is it, in Ireland?
Yeah, and he will need the run.
So he'll run second. That is good. Terry, always great to see you. Appreciate you making the time. We'll catch up with you up in Sydney when we're up there for the sales as well. And best of luck in the big Group 1s this weekend.
Thanks very much, Michael.